Hello and welcome to another episode of Loose Cannon. We are back again and we're continuing the lore book Soror Side, really good lore book that has the perspectives of Zivu Arath, Savathun, and Eris Morn, our three surviving hive gods. And we're gonna let's do the usual shit as well. This is the last week of Festival of the Lost, right? Or is next week the last week?
The next week is the last week.
So, yeah, so Festival of the Lost goes into November. That makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah. It feels a little weird this year because it'll be like almost a full week in November.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because Halloween is that Tuesday. So they had the choice to make. Do we end Festival of the Lost on Halloween, or do we give it its final week on Halloween?
Right. Because it's always roughly 3 weeks.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's always 3 weeks. Like all the holiday events. That's a standard. Yeah.
Yeah.
How have you been liking this year's Festival of the Lost?
I mean, I don't know about you, but I like the haunted lost sectors to a point. Mm-hmm. But I feel the frustration that a lot of people have with the legendary one.
Yeah.
It's really painful for what you get as a reward. And then, so I only did it enough times to, you know, check off that one stupid card slot, whatever. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the finishers and legendary.
Yeah, and I did appreciate the fact that every time I launched it, I was getting the next one. So they did something to the rotation, or I was just extremely lucky.
Oh, yeah, that one as well. Yeah, same. Actually, same here. I think it was like a round robin rotation.
Yeah, yeah. So that worked out good because every time, you know, the next one I needed just came up in queue. Mm-hmm. I do like doing the lower tier one. Mm-hmm. A lot. It's fun going in there and just banging out enemies and trying to get as many headless ones as you possibly can. Mm-hmm. So that's a fun little challenge. The reward and loot you get from the regular one is a lot. You know, you get a lot of stuff. So as far as that goes, it really just translates to like materials and maybe getting a roll on something you had never considered before.
Mm-hmm.
As far as the weapons go, they're really good.
Yeah. Yeah, I've heard good things
weapons.
I've heard good things about the horror story. How I've got a headstone demo roll. Yeah, it's a stasis weapon, obviously. And I tried it. I don't know. I just don't think I like that archetype of auto rifles. Like, I think it might just be me, but I've heard people really liked it. I didn't really get a Jurassic Green that I liked. I haven't really tried. Same goes for a cosmic and what else is there?
Macabre.
Oh, sniper. Yeah, the sniper. Yeah. I never use snipers unless it's like raid boss where sniper is like the meta choice. Otherwise, I do not use them. I used to in D1.
I only use the sniper because it's, you know, one of the checkoff points on the stupid card. Mm-hmm. So I was using Macabre because I was like, well, I don't really have another sniper on me and I'm too lazy to go to the tower and get one.
Yeah. Might as well use the one I have. Yeah. I still need to do that.
Yeah. And it drops like every 5 seconds. So I was like, I'll just use this one and see what we got. Dude, in PvP, oh my God, it's so good.
Is it?
Yeah. I mean, if you get, it doesn't even really matter which role you get because it hits hard enough to where if you accidentally body, your next follow-up is a kill. And it shoot the rate of fire is just fast enough to where you can go pop, pop. You know, it's like that cadence.
Yeah.
It's not really like a pop, 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 you know, kind of cadence. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, just what like a legendary or like an exotic would be just one hit. But if you, you know, because the state of PvP is so chaotic anyway right now. Most of the time people are flying about or blinking out of your way or there's just a cluster of people that it's so hard to hit anybody because everybody's so actively engaged in doing crazy stuff.
Yeah.
The probability for somebody like me to be able to hit a headshot with a sniper is like really low.
Yeah, I get you. I actually really liked Festival of the Lost this year. As I said on our previous podcast, I've gotten no more than seven entries in the previous 2 years. This year, I completely knocked out the book in the first week of play. And that
Wow.
a big part of that is because they reduced the cost of the entries. So it was actually much more like, okay. Because like, and it's a me thing I'm realizing where it's like I can like give my all to something across a week, but I don't want to do that across 3 weeks, you know, just like how I am personally. So the previous books, like I tallied up the number and I averaged out how quickly you can get them doing activities, and I was like, it's not worth it. Like I it was not a feasible thing to do in the week for my time to play, and it just made me give up after a few attempts. This one I did really enjoy. You know, just banging out public events, rushing around in that rhythm, just watching TV while I did it. I do really wish events like this had a centralized, you do this event, even if it's two events, kind of like how we had deep dives and salvages, even if it's two event spaces where it's you do this to get the pages and you do this to focus them, that'd be fine. I don't like go play the game that you've already played for 3 months of this season already to get more
To do the
pages.
you're
And
right, you're right.
yeah.
So the haunted sectors are kind of a nice little vacation from the usual grind, but it does take place in a lot of the lost sectors you're already familiar with. And it can
Which I don't
be
mind.
kind of and it can be kind of repetitive. So I see what you mean, like, but if there was some kind of outside area that had like a little bit more Festival of the Lost feel that you could play, then I guess it would be more fun. But yeah, you're right. Like, you go do the spire, I mean, you do it 100 million times, but you're getting candy this time while you're doing it. It's just another thing, you know, and you've already done it so much that you're probably like, well, God, you know, I want to do something different, you know.
Well, so what I was just gonna say though, just while we're on the top, while we're fresh on how you said that they're in lost sectors that we just had. So the lost sectors we do, there's one in the EDZ, there's one on the moon, there's one on Europa. I think there's four. Do you remember what the fourth one is? I can't recall.
I think there's five, isn't there?
Oh, maybe there's five. Can you remember what the fourth and fifth one are?
So
One on
there was the
Nessus.
moon. Yeah, Nessus.
Okay, I think there's
And
four.
I thought there was five.
Okay, but so what I'm saying is we've had this now for 3 years, right? So we've had Beyond Light, Witch Key, or oh yeah, no, Beyond Light. Beyond Light, Witch Queen, and Lightfall. And Beyond Light gave us EDZ, Moon, Nessus, Europa. Why did Witch Queen not give us one? Like just one new sector, one new haunted sector in Savathun's Throne World. Why did Beyond Light not give us one new sector in Neomuna?
Yeah, that's a good point. I would have liked to have seen at least one new Lost Sector. That would have been cool. Or
Just
like one new
to
haunted.
give a little something to it, you know?
Oh, and here's the thing that annoys the hell out of me is Imaru won't shut the hell up.
I liked
Like the
him for
whole
like
time
the
you're
first
playing.
two. I was like, oh, this is fun. And then it was like, enough.
I know. How hard is it to just stand on a whatever? Oh my God. Shut up, Amara.
The only other complaint I have about the Lost Sectors though is that I miss how the Haunted Forest was kind of like, see how much you can do. You know, and maybe you can't do that much. There will be a stopping point if you can't do it fast enough. But I've had teams where we crush the headless ones so fast that it's like the only reason why it takes as long as it does is because we're waiting for the next capture point to spawn and we're waiting for it to capture, you know? Whereas like, and then you kill 10 and it summons the boss and you're done and you have to reload the event. And I'm just like, I kind of wish it was like Altars of Sorrow, where it's like you could just keep going. you don't have to stop. It's your choice to pull out. You can pull out whenever you want, but you can keep going as far as you want. And I wish there was more of like a here's 7 minutes, or not, maybe 7 minutes is a little long. Here's 5-6 minutes, however many headless ones you can get. There will be a point to spawn every time one gets cleared. And after you clear so many, 2 points will spawn. After you clear so many, 3 points will always be there, even if there's a headless one up, right? Just so it's like you can just flood your zone with headless ones, boss summons. And then it'll go back. It'll like reset. But you can stay there. You don't get kicked. You got a good team, like in a blueberry group. You're like, all right, we're hanging out. We're doing this. Like we destroyed that. Let's keep going and get all of our pages in one run, whether it's 20 minutes, 30 minutes, or just the one run that you needed because you just needed one more page. You know, like
that's a good point. Yeah.
I would love to see that. Cool.
I guess they're just I don't know. I mean,
it's like a low hanging fruit.
Yeah, they did give us some good stuff, and I don't know. Maybe it's like a weird thing for them, you know? Because like Festival of the Lost has always been this thing that happens every year, but at the same point, like how much can they pour into it each year? Like I get they can build on it and just put a little bit more, but you're right. Like at least one new Lost sector would have been enough to make us feel like we got something extra, maybe.
Yeah. And that's what I mean. I can understand why they don't really want to revitalize the system that they already have in place, because that's a lot of work just for a holiday event. But I think the work to add the candles and the headless ones to a Lost Sector in the Throne World and on Neomuna would be worthwhile, because then it's just like more variety, more to accomplish.
Yeah, you're right. Well, and then so that brings us to what we're about to do is the Destiny lore card. But one of the weapons, what do you think about the weird skins on these weapons this time? It's almost like they took the Valentine's theme and threw it on there, you know, our Crimson Days.
Yeah, I really like it. I think it's a really fresh way to spice it up, because it I don't think it looks Valentine's. I think it looks like, and I don't have an example of one, so it sounds a little stupid that this is where my mind goes when I see these, and I'll throw it up because, like you said, the lore card, I'll throw it up on screen so people watching can see. Oh, actually, eating my words, I see the Valentine's. It's covered in fucking hearts. But when I look at this, I see like hard candies. I don't know why. It's just that's what, when I see like these bright, like purplish pinks with like the white and gold, I'm just like imagining like the white and gold foil wrapper that you twist open, and then you have this like little pink hard candy inside.
Well, okay, so something else was brought up. Just because like some of the weapons that we get from it, or some of the items we get from it, it does kind of look like, you know, it's got like a little bit more of that. What would you say? Like, you know, when you dress up on Halloween and you've got your costume on, and like, there's a lot of iconic costumes. And one of the things you see a lot on like Halloween are little princesses running around, you know?
Okay,
So like the children running around, it almost makes me feel like maybe they're like, you know, we've had a lot of this other stuff in here. Let's throw something out there for the little princesses of the world, trick-or-treating and stuff. So maybe that's some of it. I don't know, per se, but it is interesting. Somebody pointed it out, but the ship, what was it called? There's a ship, you know, that you get, that's kind of like from the, I think it's from Eververse, isn't it? But it definitely has the princess in the castle feel, because it's got like castle tips on it and little banner flags coming off of the tail of it, and it's pretty cool. And it's even named Fairy Tail, you know.
Yeah,
So
no, that's a good point. Yeah, this is like the princess costume for the guns. So I just put up Jurassic Green. Jurassic Green doesn't have the hearts, but it still has its dinosaur scales, which I think is really great.
Which, I mean, whatever, it's fine, I get it, but like, it just makes me curious, like, what was, and maybe there's nothing to it, maybe it's just a simple fact they wanted to make it pink, and they just thought that was cool. It does kind of remind me of when they accidentally made that shader that everybody used
Oh,
for a
I
while.
loved that. It was a night something.
Yeah,
Like
so
Knight's Edge, maybe.
maybe this is their version of giving us that shader on a
Yeah, but
weapon?
that
I don't know.
one, Knight's Chill.
Yeah, Knight's Chill. Is that what it was called? Knight's
Yeah,
Chill.
it's Knight's Chill. I'm getting the image of it now.
Okay.
Because I love that shader so much, and I'm gonna show it on a sparrow, because it is best seen on the sparrow than on the armor, because the sparrow, but this same effect happened on armor. It's just, this is much easier to see. I thought it was ridiculous. I loved it.
I did
Like,
too. That was really cool.
yeah.
It must have been a problem though, like for the game engine just to keep it around, because
Yeah,
maybe
probably.
like, yeah, maybe the way that they auto apply or whatever to the game has something to do with that pattern and color.
Yeah, maybe.
Kind of like the green screen, and you wear a green tie, and then all of a sudden everything's messed up. You're trying to do the weather, and the radar's on your tie.
Yeah.
Oh.
All right. Well, would you like to get into the lore card of this week? We'll go back to a cosmic.
Yeah, let's do it.
So brought to you from Destiny Armory Defined, we have our weekly lore card.
All right. Yeah, so like we were to point out, you know, the hearts, that's kind of a theme, I guess. It does have a little bit of a ribbon on the barrel. So this one's a pretty cut and dry, like a little bit more formal, because like what can you do with this really? But it does have some interesting tie-ins with the lore, and so I thought it was a pretty neat thing to put in Festival of the Loss. When we're kind of at the crescendo of the season and, you know, what's going to happen next, right? So the interesting thing about this is, so the flavor text doesn't give you a whole lot, but it's neat because it says, "How may we endure the desolation of the absolute?" Right? So that's kind of like, well, what the hell does that mean, you know? It basically means like, what can you do with a fate that's not good, but you have no control over? Like, what can you do with something bad happening and there's nothing you can do about it, right? So like, it's an absolute in desolation coming up ahead, and you know, what can you do with that? You know, there's nothing you can do about it, right? So it's kind of like a question, like, what can you do with that? And what I thought was interesting, the lore entry for this weapon has to do with Sloane going to the Drunken Noodle and having a somewhat homecoming reunion with Zavala. And interestingly enough, what's her name? Oh man, this is going to kill me. The Trials of Osiris, that went on a rampage killing everybody.
Aisha.
The one that was like a part of that team, and then Reed Ford was
Shayera.
not there, but yes, and then Reed Ford was not there, but they had a chair open for him because he's gone. So it was this neat little like kind of reunion and just kind of coping with the fact that Sloane's back in the city, and they're kind of helping her, you know, get her bearings, if not, you know, kind of like come to terms with a lot of things. So they're making her feel better. They're saying, hey, we got a place for you if you just want to talk. And so that's what they did. They just go to the Drunken Noodle and they don't really talk. They just kind of sit and chill and kind of lament, right? So that's nice. But in that lore entry, Sloane talks about how the city is so different now, and how like there's Elixni playing with kids and there's cabals running around, just like all these enemies that we used to have are just now a part of us, right? And the city is different and there's all this there's all this like destruction around, and but they've come so far. And so she's having to like reach inside of herself to figure out how to deal with that, right? And then obviously herself, she was taken, half taken, right?
I wonder what that really means. I hope that we get to see something more with that, like even if just in lore entries. I hope we get to see something more about what she went through and what it means for her going forward and if it's reversible.
So here's where it gets interesting, because this grenade launcher is named a cosmic, and so it's on the face of it, it's a simple definition to really understand. It basically a cosmic or any type of like Greekified, I don't know what you'd say, but like Greek type of word, like when you throw the a in front of it, it means without, it suddenly does, it means like not, and then so that means without cosmos. So what does that specifically mean? Well, a cosmism is a philosophical perspective slash belief in the absence of a cosmic order. It's the belief the universe is inherently chaotic and that any perceived order arises solely from the human need to impose patterns, meanings onto reality. So that's really interesting to use that here, because like in the flavors text, like the way the flavor text suggests, it's almost like a nihilist position that no matter what we do, our fate is slated, and there's some horrible events about to happen, and what can you do about it, right? What can you do with the absolute? So when you think in terms of absolute and you think in terms of like a cosmic, it kind of refers to the ordered universe, right? So acosmic represents a concept that challenges the traditional perceptions of existence and cosmic order. So in its simplest forms, it basically means it's a state or belief that denies the presence of a cosmic or universal order. It explores the absence or insignificance of a grand design, purpose, or meaning within the universe. It kind of counters the age-old notion that there's an inherent structure or objective value system governing our existence. A cosmic philosophy diverges from traditional religious and cosmological beliefs, which preserve or which propose an ordered, purposeful universe governed by a higher power or natural law. So this is kind of like, it's not really like atheism, right? It's just kind of like this idea that there's no grand design, there's no like massive, purpose to everything in the cosmos and the universe. It just means that everything that happened is born out of chaos, and that any perceived order arises solely from the human need to impose these patterns or these meanings onto the reality. So like, here we are, and this is kind of where you have a little bit of self-reflection when you're defining things, because here we are, I'm trying to like figure out the meaning of something that quite possibly could have no meaning at all, right? It could just be born out of chaos, like such as like the shader accident that happened in game, we try to figure out, reconcile what does that mean in lore, right? And so it's kind of funny. Like a lot of things happen, like a lot of friendships, a lot of events just happen out of chaos. And then all of a sudden, they bind us to a new path that we walk forward with. And how did we get there? Well, a series of unfortunate events brought us to this place. And now we're just trudging along to try to make good out of whatever's up ahead. But the weird thing about a cosmic thinkers is that they argue that this chaos is the result of our own thinking, our own mind. So in like a consciousness, it's gonna challenge those notions of human significance, or like we have a purpose. It's gonna kind of make you reconsider our place in the universe. But by embracing this idea, it kind of gives you an individual perspective, and it kind of absolves you from the burden of searching for some predetermined purpose or an overarching meaning in your life, right? But this viewpoint also is a focus on subjective experiences. So personal growth and pursuit of individual goals can be expected rather than conforming to some external expectation, right? And so I have to use that terminology because that external expectation that we impose on ourselves by thinking there is some grand design beyond this life, this mortal coil, is very vast. And we all have many different interpretations of that, whether you believe in this or whether you believe in that. It really comes down to like your personal belief system or, idea. So this isn't really trying to say, abandon all thought. It's just consider that maybe, this philosophy can intersect with scientific and other philosophical fields such as cosmology, existentialism, and nihilism. The critics are always going to argue that accepting this a cosmic perspective dismisses the beauty, order, and complexity observed in the natural world, and that they'll contend that our universe exhibits a remarkable harmony and interconnectedness, suggesting the presence of some form of cosmic order. But the cosmic philosophy followers will assert that recognizing the absence of a cosmic order does not diminish the wonders of the natural world. Rather, it emphasizes the role of a human and its subjectivity in perceiving and interpreting such phenomena. So it's not like I want to put this out there. Cosmism is not atheism. It's not the belief or the absence of a belief in something. It just means that everything that exists existed out of random chaos. Whether that was started by a godhead or some other whatever that you believe in, it just means that there was no like finite map or drawing that or some architectural design that created everything around you. Does that make sense?
No.
So, okay.
Over
Hard
my
to.
head.
So, I have to be delicate, but to wrap it in a nutshell, you can think of it like this. There's two ideas. There's going in and building a piece of IKEA furniture with the instructions, right? And then
Okay.
there's a way of building the IKEA furniture without the instructions, but also not really knowing what tools to use or any of that. Both can happen, but one can happen out of utter chaos, and the other one can happen out of some grand design that was structured by a specific all-seeing entity.
Okay.
Or the all-seeing entity could have just been like, here, I'm going to throw this stuff out there and we'll see what happens. And then these beautiful things grew. So there's two kind of perspectives, and it doesn't really tie to any kind of like belief system, or any of that. It just these are like two ideas coming from the same source, which may or may not have been manipulated by some massive universal being. And so a cosmism is just kind of a neat way of saying, well, maybe instead of all of this stuff being already set out for us, maybe this was all just, thrown into a pile, and these are the beautiful things that happened from that, which is kind of neat if you think about it. And so Sloan, going back to Sloan and thinking about destiny as a whole, if you think about it, it kind of has the same patterns, right? We ended up fighting the fallen, the cabal, and the hive, and then we end up aligning with them.
Well, not really with the hive, but I do see what you mean.
Yeah. So we end up using them, you know, to our advantage. I mean, we're, you know, Amaru's hanging out with us, whether that's, you know, by his own will or not. We're using them to a degree which we thought we would never do, right?
Yeah, no, you're not wrong.
So the idea is, how did we get here? Was it Bungie created this rail game that got us here, or did this whole entire Destiny lore happen because of chaos and us just making things up as we went?
Yeah.
Yeah,
I do really like the first paragraph of this entry. As you said, it's very different for Sloane going around the city and seeing, you know, Elixni and Cabal and stuff. But because I like it because in season of the Splicer, I think it was when they first came to the city. Excuse me. We had a lot of entries where the Elixni were being like persecuted and, you know, like hunted in some cases by, you know, like bigots in the city and stuff. But in this one,
yeah.
it's just like you're going th she's going through the bazaar and it's just like a human sold delicate pottery beside Elixni weavers showcasing their intricate fabrics. And then going on a little further, Abrakas tended a flame below a spit, charring meat sizzled with each turn, and war beasts lapped at the fat that trickled onto the ground. And it's like, that's crazy to think about it. And then the one that might not seem crazy, but actually kind of is two awoken corsairs shared a roasted artichoke, both warming their fingers on the coal blistered petals, because there were awoken in the city, sure, but they were earthborn awoken. These are
Yeah,
reef born awoken that are like, yeah, no, we're kicking it with the humans now, you know, like we're not as separated anymore.
which was a big deal back in D1, because even in
Yeah.
flavor text on weapons and armor, they spoke about how Earthborn and Reefborn pretty much hated each other.
Yeah. Petra only came to the city in that one event that we had, the Queen's Wrath event, the one time. Petra only
Yeah.
came to the city as way of punishment. It was a punishment to come
Yeah.
here. And now they're
Yeah.
just like, yeah, let's go get some fucking artichokes.
Let's go chill. Let's go chill and eat some artichokes with the vermin.
Yeah, and you know, Mara's posted up at the farm, like not even the city.
Like the yeah. Yeah. That's crazy.
Yeah. It's a nice little story that you wouldn't expect to get in a Festival of the Lost.
Right. I'm just curious, like, what is the ultimate setup? Because I feel like the
Ooh,
Ahamkara
sorry.
have been the ever-present, you know, looming
I can't wait.
mystery of the game.
I can't wait until post Final Shape when we're dealing with episodes because I'm very confident that at some point we'll get an Ahamkara episode. We just need whatever is going to happen to kick off Ahamkara are back, right? Like something's
There
got
you
to
go.
happen. I refuse to believe that an entity like the Ahamkara, first of all, was even hunted into extinction. And second of all, was completely associated in our system. You're telling me there's not some like far away that's gonna be like, all right, well, we just got word that the witness was killed, so let's go see what's up with the traveler now. You know, like
There you go.
they're gonna move in, like it's gonna happen.
Yeah.
I'm just waiting for it.
Yeah, and I mean in throughout the lore from day one of Destiny, you know, there have been wishes made and wishes granted, and you know, there are pieces of armor and weapons that, you know, have to do with the Ahamkara. And then there's just all these, like, you know, third wall breaking moments that happen throughout the game. So, you know, I feel like, and we just got a set of armor with this last season called the what is it, the Hinter something or other sets, which are all Ahamkara themed. They have, you know, bone structure, all that stuff all over them.
Oh, yeah. You're considering that to be Ankara?
Absolutely. Yeah,
Huh.
100%. Yeah.
Legend. So
And
that's,
so,
if that is Ankara, you know what's really funny?
what?
That's the first time a Titan has Ahamkara armor.
Exactly. The first time that Titan specifically adorned themselves with the bone of Ahamkara.
And that used to fucking drive me nuts in Destiny 1 because warlocks used to have Skull of Dire Ahamkara and
Right on your
claws,
face, dude.
yeah, and claws of Ahamkara, and hunters had young Ahamkara's spine, and titans had none. And so people look at that and go, so titans are incapable of killing Ahamkara, and it's like, no. And
No.
it's like, no, it's just they don't wear the bones for whatever reason because it's not their style. Maybe because thematically they exclusively only wear things that they themselves craft. So it's like that's why they use plasteel. And then it went even further and pissed me off even more because people were like, well, warlocks have a dire Ahamkara. And hunters only have young Ahamkaras. So clearly, only warlocks could actually kill an Ahamkara, and only hunters were able to kill a young Ahamkara. But if it was like a full grown one, hunters couldn't beat it. I'm like, where the fuck is your head?
Right.
The
And
people who thought that.
so what scares me about that, and right when we got the set, I saw the Ahamkara bone, and then it made me think, like, well, what the hell is this talking about? And so, like, if you just look up the definition for the hunter set, hinterland, it basically means like the beyond, like what is lying up ahead and beyond what we can, see. So that kind of makes me wonder, like, is this a sneaky hint that there's this overarching presence of Ahamkara that we are just not, like, we're aware of them, but we're just not, like, air quotes, aware of them, right? Anyway,
Wait.
that's just where my mind goes.
Cowl, vest, cloak, strides, vest, cowl, grips. Wait, Hinterland is only the hunter set. What's the other sets?
They're named something else. I have to look it up, but they all have the Ahamkara bone.
Well, I know they all have the Ahamkara bone. Sorry to put that in air quotes. I want to read because the hunter one is really interesting, and I want to read
The Titan one.
I want to read the Titan one.
I mean, I could grab my notes here. Let me see.
Biosphere Explorer is one of
Yeah,
them.
that's one of them. Yeah.
All right. We're gonna do this
Yes.
live. We're gonna
Okay. Let's see who's faster.
Okay, so I got the Titan.
There you go. And ossuary.
Damn it, I was just about to say an ossuary.
There you go.
All right, so let me pull up ossuary.
Yeah. Well, there's the image of all three of them if you just want to show what they look like in their total sets.
Oh no, I wanna read
Oh,
what they
okay.
say.
Yeah. Well,
So
the biosphere is kind of interesting. I like
what?
it.
What is a biosphere explorer?
Well, I mean, as it pertains to Destiny, I don't think that there's like a definitive way, but like a biosphere would just be any kind of contained environment.
Okay.
So you think about a biosphere, you think about like any contained environment of biological life within
Oh, so
its
like
own
a,
realm,
okay, like a biome.
within its own realm, removed from everyone else's biosphere. So that's what gets me going with this stupid set, because it's like, are the Ahamkara in some other higher living realm? And we're
Okay.
in the biosphere? Yeah, you see what I'm saying? So like the Titan is exploring the biosphere that he's stuck in, which is
Yeah.
Destiny 2's universe.
Which is what the Ahamkara believe.
Yeah,
They
exactly.
talk to
Well,
the
it
player. They talk about how they know that they're just pixels on a screen. So that's really cool.
Yeah.
An ossuary, because I just looked this up, is a container or room in which the bones of dead people are placed. So,
Boom.
if there was a great Ahamkara hunt, what do they do with the bones? They collect them all, right? They put them in a fucking room somewhere, probably, right? So that makes sense. So the Hinterland Cowl, this is the hunter set. The helmet reads, the Hinterland Cowl reads, the beast snarls and the hunter whispers. The grips reads, the beast mauls and the hunter waits. The vest reads, the beast postures and the hunter watches. The boots reads, the strides read, the beast tramples and the hunter stalks. And the cloak reads, there is no winning the ancient game of blood, tooth, and claw. So that's really interesting. That sounds very.
So the blood, tooth, and claw line is a callback to the warlock claws of Ahamkara, which are a famous quote from an author that wrote the famous quote about tooth and claw.
Really?
So that's kind of like interesting just on its own, because maybe the writers in Destiny are just bringing a little bit of a tie back to that, just kind of
Yeah.
like a callback.
Especially if it is supposed to be Ahamkara themed. And then, so we're going to go into the Biosphere, the Titan set. The helmet reads, hunger teaches resourcefulness. Isolation teaches clarity. Deprivation teaches discipline. Terror teaches alacrity. And the mark reads, each deadly encounter gifts a lesson. I'm with you. This is fucking Ahamkara. Okay,
And
and then
it's interesting because like that's those little things that they're popping in there for each class are all things that we gain from understanding the or using the Ahamkara to understand our universe. Because we famously know that during the hunts, Zavala made a wish, Shax made a wish, Eris famously made a wish and is still holding one. All of these people, Ikora even made a wish. All of these people made wishes, and even we made a wish in it sorta
No, we
in
did.
our in our game. So like we were doomed from the start.
Yeah, no, we made a wish in the Last Wish raid. We wished for Riven's destruction. We wished for Riven's death.
And I say like sort of only because that was like, that could have been a manipulation. It just depends on how it plays out.
Yeah, because it's kind of like you wished for this, and it's just like, no, I didn't. This is an RPG. No, I didn't. You can't tell me what I did. And then so finally, the Warlock set the ossuary cover. Find beauty in the enamel. Find warmth in the marrow. Find meaning in the matrix. Ooh. Find flexibility in
Cellular.
the fragments. And then the bond reads, though we defy death, we may yet make use of it. Fucking Ahamkara, man. Holy shit, you're right.
I told you.
Oh, I can't wait.
So
What
that's what I love about the
if it's next
Ahamkara, because
season?
it I would love that. I don't think it will be,
I mean, what
but
else
I
are we
would
gonna
love
do next
that.
season? We need a dungeon, we're gonna fight an Ahamkara. Come
I mean,
on.
there's eggs. There's the corrupted egg that, Mara's still hanging on to.
Oh man, I'm excited.
There's even a ghost shell with a baby Ahamkara printed on it, and it says something like, coiled and awaiting.
Interesting. Well, we need to get onto the Suricide lore book, but I
Sorry to
can't wait
derail.
because we're what, like 3 weeks away from the new season, right? Like we're like right there.
Almost not even a month.
Yeah, so I would love it if we were like on this saying it's Ahamkara season, and then it was.
That would be great. I
How
just wish it would
great would
play
that
out
be?
like, I would just wish it would play out like the Dune saga and we could actually fight Ahamkara and ride them like worms.
Yeah, I'm trying to think because that would be a really high tech encounter. Like that would be rough. Like we physically saw Riven falling down in the Last Wish, and then we fought Riven's head because it was so large, you know? And there are technical limitations to that, but I'm thinking
Well,
of
they
it like,
change and shape shift, so
yeah.
that's what I was thinking.
Well, yeah, and that's what I'm so I'm trying to think like there is the opportunity to do it, but is it like technically feasible, not knowing anything about game development? And
Yeah, I know nothing.
I was thinking of it like kind of like the Siege Engine, which is like this big moving object, but it's kind of just a device that's moving in this direction. And it's like, what if we gave the illusion of movement and we're on a giant, like so giant that it's basically just like, it's like the
Back
Siege
or
Engine.
something.
Yeah, we're on its back. It's the size of the Siege Engine, or longer than the Siege Engine. It's the size of that wall. And we have to like damage sections of it. We have to place charges or something and cause damage to it along the way. And then we get the fuck off of it and it like stuns it. And then it comes down to a smaller shape or a different form. And then we fight it in a different form. And that would be really cool
That would be epic.
if we had like, here's this impractical fight that you're physically on the beast moving around, and maybe well, Taken's a, I'm trying to think like who would be on the side of the Ahamkara that we could fight, and it's like there's an enemy faction on the beast as well, right? Or maybe it's like, because even the Siege Engine had splicers to fight while you're carrying the pieces. That's what made it so difficult. You had to fight your way through all like the captains and shit.
Oh, yeah, that's true. Well, it could just be maybe everybody's trying to gain power of a specific Ahamkara and you got to fight them along the way.
Yeah. Either way, I hope to see cars in a few weeks.
Me too.
But we need to get into this book. And so last week we ended on Kato Phi. I'm trying to remember it. Kato Phi.
Yeah, that Greek word. Kato Philomar. Whatever the hell.
Oh, there it is. Catolophyromai.
Yeah. The
I
Philomai.
had to look at the English spelling to get it. I
That's
was close
funny.
though. So the first entry we're gonna have is entry 7 from Zivu Wrath. It's called Deathless, and these are entries of the Books of Sorrow, if you don't remember that from last week. Verse 8-7, Liminal. I'm tempted. Now I'm gonna do it. So a liminal space, for example, is a space that is a space that is in time that is between what was and what is next. And so like there's like videos and horror games and stuff where you're kind of in liminal spaces. Like the back rooms is one that I'm a fan of sometimes. And I just wanted to say, on my drive to work, I think I've told you this in DMs, on my drive to work, there is 100% a liminal space on this road. It's a long, flat road that has a slow turn, and a car will be 30 feet in front of me, going 45 miles an hour, 30, 40 feet in front of me, just far enough in front of me that when they round the corner, I lose them for 2, 3 seconds, and when I round the corner, they're gone. And from
Yeah, that's
rounding the
awesome.
corner, it's a straight road. And I've lost cars, I've lost trucks, I've lost a school bus. And I'm like, how the fuck did I lose a school bus? And it's
That's
like,
awesome.
I'm like, they're gone. They're in another universe. And then I think, what if I'm in another universe? What if I'm in a universe so exactly like my own that I can't even tell the difference?
You know, here's something funny. My father used to play with me when I was a little kid and say stuff like, you know, I would sneeze and he would just look at me and go, "Oh, you jumped." And I didn't know what he meant by that. He was just messing with me and I'd be like, "What?" He go, "Yeah, you jump. Every time you sneeze, you jump bodies." And like, what does that do to a little kid? You know, he's just messing with me.
Oh, that's funny.
I was like, "Huh?"
I thought it was funny when he was just like, "Oh, you jumped!" Like before he even got into the traumatizing. I thought it was just funny to just like tell a child a blatant lie.
You jumped.
It's like, no, I
Oh, you
sneezed. It's like,
jumped.
no, you jumped.
Later in life, he was just like, yeah, there was this some guy that said, some famous person that said, like, what if it was just a scenario,
Yeah, like
like
a
a
random
thought
quote.
experiment. He was like, what if every time you sneezed, you jump bodies?
That's a movie right there.
That's
Okay.
Everything Everywhere All at Once.
Oh, is it actually, or are you just referencing that movie again?
No, I'm just saying like it makes me think of that.
Yeah. All right, so Deathless, verse 8-7, Liminal. My throne, Carved to Endure by Zebor Wrath, God of Love. My court is war and you will find me there. I am war and my throne is deathless. Come, cut the outer curtain of my fortress and it will open its new eye in a bloodless laceration. Cut further to see inside its wall the yellow fat, the purple viscera, the teeming rust-cut capillaries. These are the colors of war. These are the colors of my court. My gates open to the most life. The swollen fountains run with blood and burst the arterial spray. The paths are paved with small white teeth. They gnash beneath each footfall, their roots raw and alive. Look, I have raised cathedrals made of flesh. When a breeze caresses them, they blush and contract, fine hairs sensing the change. They are worshipped but with bare touch. My throne shudders with joy. The halls of my palace are echoing throats, slick and filled with breath. Its windows are glazed with skin, opalescent and alive, latticed with blue-black veins. The seats of my throne are fashioned with living bones. Break them and you will see their raw red marrow. Break them and wet pith will writhe. Two are knotted with scars, broken and reformed, broken and reformed. Look out to the terrace and see the worlds we will devour to sustain us. It is a mouth, yawning black and wide and hungering. It is open in screams of base need. My court is love, and you will meet me there. That's fucking twisted.
Yeah, it's black metal at its core.
Christ.
Yeah, I know. It's describing her throne world as if it was just a torn open cavity of something that was once living. And like it's really cool. I think one of the cool things to do when you're describing horror or you're describing horrific scenes is to really just point out all of the little things that otherwise would seem like, why am I talking about this? This is not interesting, but it is, because you're just describing the environment in great detail, which adds so much flavor. And so I always think about what we see from the hive architecture and structures. We see a lot of, like, you know, just for instance, the Oryx weapons that we had from D1, they look like bone stripped, you know, bone that was just stripped clean of flesh, but there's still like sinew and pieces attached to, you know, the marrow and stuff like that, that you see poking out. And then you see, like, in Sorrow, what is it called? In the, on the moon with the,
Sorrow's Harbor.
Yeah. Sorrow's Harbor. You see a lot of that repeated as well. Just like, whereas in just regular hive stuff, you just see more of like a cleaner, chitinized environment. Whereas even in Oryx's throne world, it was very black and, like, you know, muddy almost, and, you know, just like dark black, like everything has just rotted to completion. And then, you know, you see the counter to that, which is like Sabathun's throne world. It's very polished and opalescent, or pearlescent and like shimmering with color, but it's very much the same architecture and mass. It's like the bone strip clean and polished to a high point. And then now you're listening to Zebor Wrath describe hers, which is much more like fresh cut, you know, death. Which is just gory with, like, you know, just,
I mean, ugh. It doesn't even sound like death. It sounds like just like,
well, it sounds like straight up gore, like the swollen fountains run with blood and burst from arterial spray. Like, I mean, that's like straight up brand new, you know, cuts.
No, but it's like, so with the exception of the fountains, right? With the exception of the fountains, it sounds like she's saying that her throne world, her court, is a living creature that she's inside. Like a fucked up creature, but a living one.
I see what you're saying.
It's like you cut the outer curtain and bloodless laceration, cut further to see inside its wall, the yellow fat, the purple viscera teeming with rust cut capillaries. So it's like you're physically cutting into a body. And the fountain, which I'll give you, is the only thing that's like actually by her doing gorish, because then it's like the paths are paved with small white teeth. They gnash beneath each footfall, their roots raw and alive. What does that mean? Like they're extracted teeth? I
Yeah,
took
I mean,
that.
that's all I can think of. You know, it's
I
almost
took that to
like,
mean that they're like actual just teeth in the ground.
oh,
So
I see what you
like
mean.
teeth in the meat of whatever this is. Kind of like there are animals that have like teeth in their mouth, like not just like a jaw, but like,
Well, I
kind
think
of like
it's like,
that.
I think it kind of describes like her, like she's cutting a path forward and they're paved with the small teeth that's maybe from her, whatever, you know, like.
I think it's like teeth that live as that road, and it's only a road because you're walking on it. And then I have raised cathedrals made of flesh. When a breeze caresses them, they blush and contract, fine hairs sensing the change. So it's not like she's flayed creatures and then just made a castle out of flesh. It sounds like it's a living flesh cathedral. It's not dead, it's alive. They are worshipped with bare touch. My throne shudders. Her throne shudders with joy. Her throne is alive.
Okay. So that makes a little bit more sense. So she's just like actively engaged in creating a throne world that is very much living in a way that is just horrific.
Yeah, its windows are glazed with skin, opalescent and alive, latticed with blue-black veins. Like nothing in her throne world is dead. Because it's deathless. Like that's literally the title of the card.
Sure. It's just act of gore.
Yeah, I guess. Kind of
Well,
Jeepers Creepers.
that's yeah, exactly. Yeah. I mean, yeah. Xivu of Wrath is really cool. I really like, you know, I mean, I'm not an active participant in heavy metal, death metal, stuff like that. I do listen to certain like bands from time to time just because I've kind of gained an appreciation for them along the way. But I was never like a member of, you know, a heavy metal, like, you know, scene. Like I didn't get into it. I was always a punk, you know,
Yeah, same.
or really big into hip hop and stuff like
Yeah.
that when I was growing up.
Like
Anything that just
tangentially,
pretty
you
much
were
would.
there, but not really.
Yes. Yeah. And it's because there's a lot of subcultures that bleed from it,
Yeah.
right? You know, you have speed punk, speed metal, really kind of in the same. But and then we all grew up with it. You know, you like had your big bands like, you know, AC/DC, Metallica, Black Sabbath, all of that stuff from way back when, and then it kind of blurred into this emo screamo stuff that happened. But that being said, Xivu of Wrath is straight up metal.
Yeah. Yeah,
And
very much.
I have a good appreciation for the way that she speaks because
Yeah.
it's probably one of the more entertaining things that happen in lore or just in game in general when she talks. It's like violence coming out of her mouth. And I
Yeah.
get it. Like I get the allure.
Yeah, like Oryx is like kind of like brooding threat to us type of thing, where he's like really fucking high on himself and it's like, bro, calm down. And Savathun is very like, I'm smarter than you, but also I like recently, like more as we see from her, she's like very just like, I don't know, maybe coy is the word, where she's like, it looks good on you, honey. And she's almost painting herself as never having been a terrorizing threat, where she's like, yeah, like I've tricked cultures into like killing themselves by poisoning their water supplies and shit like that, but I'm not a bad person. I it's like she has a reality TV show on E. It's like that's kind of what she gives me.
That's funny, dude. All right. Well, do you want me to read the next one?
Yeah, go for it.
Okay. All right. So this one is Savathun, Swords and Lanterns, verse 8:8, Ascension. my sorry, sad, inculcated sister. She thinks she's as honest as a knife's edge just because she never speaks a lie aloud. But she's prone to contradiction, at least since our beloved brother fell. She can never quite understand it. Someone as mighty as Oryx brought down by liars, his bloodline destroyed, his corpse left to desiccate in Saturn's orbit. Xevu of Wrath actually believed that dreadnought of his was unsalable, but Oryx knew that he had limits. More than once, he took the power of our deaths to defeat something stronger than him. She's just bitter she wasn't there to die for him again. She says she's the god of death, but I've seen her throne. It's a mausoleum for life with the closed, cloying comfort of birthing room, wet and raw and filled with disgusting effluvia. I imagine it reminds her of our garden so long ago and all the things that grew there. She really shouldn't be so nostalgic. There was a game we played when we were young, Swords and Lanterns. Sathona held the lantern while Zyro held the sword. Sathona would reach for her hidden sister, and Zyro would avoid the lantern's light. If Zyro touched Sathona with her sword, she would win. If Sathona found Zyro with her lantern, she would win. Sathona devised the rules, but Zyro would let her sister find her. I still give her presents too, of course. I gave her Torbattle, my gift to the last living or last surviving sibling. She gobbled it up so greedy, she didn't even consider how it proved her precious logic false. What kind of thing is a gift? The deep doesn't like gifts. Neither does logic. But we're sisters. I thought I'd be nice and share. Xevu was too busy to notice that little contradiction. She never even thanked me. What did she say as soon as she let set foot on Torbattle? For as long as you are, have worshipped war, you have worshipped me. Ayat, ayat. That was Torbattle. I know a joke in a dead language. And then this word.
Yeah.
Iabot.
What? Iabot. Yeah, that's how I would say it as
Like
well.
what? Yeah. So interesting. The
Yeah.
little Savathun joke.
But you see what I mean? Like that reads like she's got a talking head in her reality show. Like Zivu was too busy to notice that little contradiction. She never even thanked me. You know, just
Yeah.
that
You're
she
correct. You're
Savathun's like a
correct.
desperate housewife.
Yeah. That's interesting.
That's a joke no one will get, but my wife is mad at me for making this. I always reverse desperate and real housewives because she likes both of those.
I don't watch that show.
Yeah, neither do I. But yeah, that's an interesting game, the Swords and Lanterns.
It's pretty
J
cool
just
that
as is
the
yeah.
yeah. It's interesting, like they have compassion for one another, but they see how their whole existence is just
Yeah.
seeking and destroying each other into oblivion. And it is funny because, like, that is the how they, in a way, that is how they love each other, right? It's just hating and killing each other.
Yeah, I don't want to spoil it, but it gives me Sandman vibes a little bit in the aspect of like, yes, we're these like great immortal beings and everything. However, like you have spurned me and now I'm mad at you and we're family and that means I'm gonna try to kill you and that's fine. Like no repercussions from the rest of the family. It's like, oh, well. Yeah.
That's just what they do.
Yeah.
The next one's short.
Yeah, it's really short. So, Xevu Wrath, Antigone Drowns. I don't know if that's actually how you pronounce it. Verse 8-9, Lament on Xevu's Mourning, sung by Xevu Wrath, sister to a dead king. Grief. There is no grief. I will not grieve. Fear. There is no fear. We do not fear. Pity. There is no pity. There is nothing to pity. Grave. He will have no grave. We do not dig graves. Rot. He rots beneath the waves.
Yeah. That's kind of cool. So that's basically just Ziva Arath kind of crying in her song about,
Yeah.
you know,
Getting a little emo in her metal.
yeah. Her little emo poem.
Yeah. Like
I,
that's how she
it's funny
starts
because
it.
we, it's funny because I feel kind of a semi responsibility to the writers because while we poke fun and just like, you know, make these jokes, it is really good writing.
Yeah, no, I agree.
Yeah.
I agree. It's this, it's silly to it's silly
Yeah.
having
Yeah.
Zivu be so metal, and then here's this like
Yeah.
little bit of emo sprinkled in.
Yeah.
Do you want me to read the next one since that one was so short?
Yeah, go for it, man.
Okay, so Eris Morn, the auger cast her bones. Verse 810, the lie. It is a dire error to see Savathun's predictions as truths divined from some inner foresight. She does not prophesize. What we are attempting here was just one possibility of an infinite collection of possibilities, a choice we made in an infinite collection of choices. She could not have anticipated them all. She could only cast her bones in the space between certainty and augury and watch them fall. It is odd to speak of her in the past tense. Even in death, she is here with us, pulling at our strings, howling with laughter at her failings as she did years ago. But now our failings will be her sister's triumph and Savathun's lasting death. No, the Witch Queen never dealt in fate. In this, we share her understanding of the universe. Every moment is a result of a meticulous application of desire. This path was carefully constructed, and we were predictable enough to place our footsteps in the imprints she made for us. It is a truth dressed as a lie, so that we may overlook it. But it is not fate. Fate is the purview of Zebra Wrath's childish logic. The dead were destined for death, and the fall of her sword is inevitable. We are not as easily fooled as she. That logic is a lie dressed as a truth, so that we may waste our time with it. No, I am not here because of fate. I am here because of will and machination. But neither are my own. But if neither are my own, is that any more desirable? No matter, I will take control. I possess that power. I will cast my bones, as the Witch Queen did, between certainty and augury. I will see Zivuarath's worm devour her. She will be struck down by her own bargain and fall like lightning. I will see Savathun's undone by my own trickery. She will behold me as I am, and know that I am her ruin. This is the path I lay for them, and they will follow it. Aya.
Yeah.
Savathun
So
being very badass.
yeah. I mean, so
Or
that's
Eris.
Eris. Eris. Yeah. That's Eris just basically telling us what she did.
Yeah.
So,
Yeah,
like,
actually, yeah.
everything she, yeah. So that's pretty cool because now, like, in hindsight, we saw that she was able to enact that plan of basically using fire against fire.
You know what I just
You know?
fucking realized?
What?
Savathun got everything she wanted.
Yeah, in a way she did. Yeah. So that's kind of like what we were talking about last episode. It was Savathun doing what she did a sacrifice?
Yeah. Because so she's in the worm. This is pre-Witch Queen, right? She's got the
Yeah.
worm pact. She's understanding time's running out. She's not going to be able to keep this up for long. The witness wants her calcified just as much as it wants everything else calcified, and she does not want that. So she goes down this path of sacrifice and devotion and bravery, blah blah blah, get the light, remove her worm without dying. But that doesn't solve everything, because by doing that, Zivuarath would see her as blasphemous, and Zivuarath would come and hunt her down. So what does she do? She makes herself an easy target for the Guardians. The Guardians kill her, but Amaru escapes, knowing that one day they would need Amaru to come back
Yeah.
and give them the secrets
Yeah.
of how to get into the final shape portal. And they would be like,
Yeah.
all right, yeah, I'll help you, but you got to deal with Zebul Wrath first. And so we bring her back. She goes, I never fucking wanted Amaru. I never wanted the light. I wanted rid of my worm. And now I'm happy. I'm just going to go fuck off. She, you know, she's
Yeah.
the villain on the fucking like Bahamas beach at the end of the movie, like with a fake mustache
Yeah.
now and like drinking the Mai Tai. And it's like, she won.
Yeah.
She fucking did it.
Yeah. She circumvented her proposed fate from the worm bargain that she was
Oh
duped
my
into.
God. That was
Yeah.
amazing.
Yeah, that's funny.
I can't believe
Yeah.
that. That was very, very good of her.
Oh.
All
Okay,
right.
well,
Would you like to take the
I
next
can
one?
read the Yeah, I'll read the next one. It's Eris Morn again. Or it's Eris Morn. They drink strong poison. You know, it's so funny having hindsight on these. But
Yeah.
anyway. So Eris Morn, they drink strong poison. So verse 8:11, the truth. The hive are not a monolith. They have internal contradictions, strife, tensions. These threaten to engulf them. There is a fissure forming that I alone behold with my open eyes. I will one day yawn and gape, and something will crawl from it that will shake the hive's foundations. Perhaps that thing is me. They sense this possibility and cling to their imperative truth out of fear. To this end, Zevu Arath lies to herself continuously. With each deception, she immures herself in a great fiction she must restore with each forming crack. This is why they fear and revere their own logic. The first doubt, the oldest doubt, the Entozanya, I don't know how to say that word, Entalzana, it would destroy them. To this end, Oryx's grand philosophy encompasses everything it touches, every paradox, every conflict. Love is death, war is love, and what is at peace is sick. Even his defeat was a movement towards the final shape, as he knew that his killer would become him. In his logic, that is all his killer could become. It makes failures into proofs, so that their logic may wither or weather them. It will all collapse one day. I will make sure of it. I will break their truth by my becoming. I have stolen much from the hive. I took their eyes, their fetid magic, and now I have taken from them again. Each time I descend into the deep, I take what I need and take what I am owed. Just as the Taken King slew Akka to satiate his worm, I see now, with all my years of study and strife, all my years of venturing into the dark so that I may put my eyes to good use, I have conjured them. This is what Zevu Arath sees when she beholds my morph, her brother, triumphant, reborn. In this way, I am truly loved. So that's a neat entry to unpack. She basically says in all of that that just as, you know, everything the hive are, she kind of embodies that whole truth. And they aren't just a monolith, you know, they're not just this structure to be held up as an example against the universe. And in a way, she is a part of the hive, love to be a new sister among them.
So in that entry you said there's a word that you didn't know how to pronounce. That
I
isn't the
don't.
first time we've seen that word. The first time we saw it was actually back in Shadowkeep in one of the records. And
Yeah.
so Oryx is dead. To deny this is to drink strong poison. That's how it starts.
Yeah.
That then th this entry is they drink strong poison.
Yeah.
So right off the rip, great fucking
Oh, okay. That's a
great
good one.
jab from Eris. So
Yeah.
how can our mighty king, the spear that pierced 100 million lying lungs, be killed by those who would deny the all-edged truth? Is this the end of progress towards the true and final shape? Is this the enteoxana, a fate worse than extinction, the triumph of the oldest doubt and the end of our way? Is it the incomprehensible fate which the needle-fingered one calls the fraying of the cord? Now, so it's not a word, and because of that, I believe it's a riff on a word, and I want to find the word it is. I haven't been able to find it, but in the middle of the word is teox, and so a fate worse than extinction. Like.
So it's like interjecting in a normal word that we know of, but it's probably from it's probably from the poems, the word that basically means, hymns and poems, in Hedwana. I don't even know if I'm pronouncing that word
Yeah,
correctly.
I was just looking that up.
Because remember, we go back to the Greek word that was unpronounceable. That was brought from the Mesopotamian area, just as this word was too.
Yeah, and Hegewana, also translated as an Hegewana or variants, was the Entu priestess of the high moon god Nana in the Sumerian city state of Ur in the rain. Which is always funny whenever that has and Hegewana has been celebrated as the earliest known named author in world history as a number of works in the Sumerian. Okay.
So there's a whole collection of poems attributed to the ed in Hedwana, which I knew about. I don't like know them offhand, but they're basically these old tablets that were uncovered a long, 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 long time ago, and it's just this writing of basically they're like laments. It's almost very similar to what we uncovered earlier in this lore entry with that Greek word that that's all in Greek.
Oh no, I figured it out. On the Wikipedia page, the occupation is called N priestess, like EN space priestess. N is a Sumerian cuneiform for lord or priest. So like Lord Teox or Priest Teox. And then the subject is Nana, which is also known as Nana, was the Mesopotamian god representing the moon. Oh, maybe not.
Well, no,
Wait, no, representing the
it inc
moon, the 53rd moon, the traveler. So Teox. Are they saying that Teox is like a disciple of the traveler?
or the traveler itself.
A fate worse than death.
To be born of the traveler is a fate worse than death. There's a lot to unpack with that.
The triumph of our oldest doubt in the end of our way. Because what I was thinking with this, with the original, is this the end of the progress toward the true and final shape? Is this the enteoxuana, the fate worse than extinction? The last thing we knew about Teox was that she was like cryogenically frozen, which is kind of funny to be like she was pretty much calcified, a fate worse than extinction. It's like that is the final shape.
Is
I don't know.
that the statue that we're talking about? Oh man, we gotta like we're gonna
This
have to
is,
like unpack this somewhere else and
yeah.
dive into it.
Remember,
Shit.
those leaks that never came true, how or leaks like pre-Destiny 1 that never came true, how we were supposed to actually have like a priestess of the traveler appear and
Yeah,
like
the
guide us
woman
to the trap,
figure in
yeah, the
the
woman
original.
figure. What if they're kind of going back to that? What if they're making that Teox?
That would be really cool, and I would appreciate that. And then,
How?
like, somehow the shape of the traveler is a calcified form. And then that statue was Teox in stasis somehow. And then all of the fragments that we created the ghost out of are the fragments of that original being of Teox. This is all speculation. Do not run with this, lore community. I'm just throwing shit out there and seeing what noodles stick to the wall.
Oh
But
my
that would
God.
be some hardcore in
That
fun
would,
stuff.
because that would be like stuff that we learn in Final Shape. I feel like that's it. It's Priestess Teox of the Traveler. It's Priestess Teox of the 53rd Moon, rather. I think that's it.
That would be so cool. And she became the mini. Well, anyway.
Oh, wait. Actually, let's see this because I found a Reddit post that broke this down 4 years ago. Oryx, their ancestor and forefather, is dead with an empty throne, and his slayer denied his truth. New hive term, and Teoxana, a fate worse than extinction, the triumph of the oldest outlaw, end of the way. Reference to Savathun as the needle fingered one. So as I read, is it the incomprehensible fate which the needle fingered one calls the fraying of the cord? The incomprehensible fate, which would be being devoured by your own worm because you cannot possibly feed it enough. This also points to liars being guardians or light bearers. Oh wait, sorry, I skipped ahead a bit. They believe. The Hive believe Oryx is still winning and are asking Oryx to return after they have pleased him. They believe that when Guardians killed Oryx, Oryx is using the Guardians as a sword to shape the Hive. This may support Tolan's belief in the sword logic, viewing Oryx as his king too. Tolan viewing Oryx as his king too. The paragraph with "She was once a liar drenched in the sky" is referencing Eris and her mission. This is also points to liars. Guardian Tolan believe that Eris is meant to. They don't
Yeah,
seem
I
to
don't know.
have.
That one kind of spins off.
They were just like throwing out like a kind of like we are. They're just throwing out a number of breakdown based on that paragraph and what it could tie to with the story of Shadowkeep. I don't think it's really giving what we're giving, but we have 4 more years of knowledge behind us as well. So it's nothing against I should and Teox on. I should shout out them since I read some of their stuff from Reddit user A Shadow of Yore. So thank you for that. Helped us a little bit there. But yeah, I think that's it.
Well, the last entry is we read it last time, sort of, but it's basically the culmination of everything, which is really interesting because it's called the, Savathun Love, but it's verse 8:12, the wish.
Do you want to read it or do you want me to read it?
No, you read it.
Okay, so as Rhino had said, Savathun is the narrator, entries love, verse 8:12, the wish. Eris will comport herself beautifully. I wish I could behold her morph. I can see it in my mind's eye. Her chitin will engulf her. Her eyes will be uncovered. She will laugh, and what a delightful sound that will be after everything. Genuine, full of my guile and my sister's zest for life. I may still see her morph. There's still time. I'll be so proud of her. It will seem like fate, something that couldn't have happened any other way. But Eris is smart enough to recognize my touch. She will realize it was me and understand that this is what I made for her. She'll see all the intricacies of the path I have laid before her from the moment my nephew raised his sword. Not too long ago, that understanding would have starved me. Now it's just icing on the cake. I hope she's not too upset. Oh well, I'm sure she'll get over it. There are contingencies, of course. It's foolish to put all your eggs in one basket. One must lay snares and set events in motion that may never quite snap into place. But this was easy. Perfectly aligned. Zivu Arrath will make it clear why it had to be this way. She will do exactly what I know she will do because that is all she is ever able to do. anything else would kill her. Because in the end, my sister just wants someone to live fully and completely, and she's given up on me. So I will give her Eris Morn.
Yep. And that was it.
Yeah. That's a good book. That's a really good book. I'm really glad that we read it because we found a lot of little details that we might have skimmed over otherwise.
Yeah. That was really good.
Do you have any closing thoughts that you want to share?
Nope. I'm just going to go search Teox now.
Yeah, right. All right. So our next episode is going to be November 12th. It's going to be same time, same place. So we hope to see you there. If you want to find more of us, we are at Loose Cannon Show on Twitter. Our pinned tweet has everything that we got. This episode, if you came in late and you want to see it all, will be posted everywhere it goes, YouTube and all the podcasts, Spotify and all that good stuff. So we hope you enjoy it, and we hope you have a good last Festival of Lost week.
Yeah.
Bye, everybody.
Bye.